welcome to the Sikkim Sportscast. I'm Steve Cook, here with your editor and publisher, Kevin Longquist. And Kevin, Baylor just picked up a really good defensive line transfer. I'm going to try and pronounce this correctly, Trevon Mahai. And
Yeah, pretty good.
And he played at Oregon last year, played in all 12 games. So this isn't a scrub. This is a good get.
Yeah, this is a get. And, of course, the familiarity there is that Matt Pallage, who was the co-defensive coordinator at Oregon last year and comes to Baylor, so there's that great connection there and probably a major reason why it worked. I mean, he got a – you know, I came in for his official visit last week, you know, got some offers from some quality schools, but because of that relationship, that makes a difference. It always does. I mean, look at how the Barrington brothers came in on the offensive line because of their relationship with Grimes and Eric Mateos. That always means something down the line. And a good number of those cases where kids are transferred because such the transient nature of coaching that those past relationships can get people to reunite with each other. I think in this case with Mahai, it's something where you're getting a guy who has a track record of some success. You know, appeared in all 13 games for the Ducks last year, was a guy that I think people felt, you know, contributed. And that's one thing is in some of these cases with the guys who hit the portal is that their experience is somewhat shaky and it's like hit and miss again. You know, maybe they appeared in, you know, you see stories of guys that, well, he appeared in four games last year and had a tackle and that was it or something like that. Mm-hmm. But in this case,
in the fourth quarter against an FCS.
Well, yeah, something like that. Very true. And something like this with Mahai is he was in the rotation to an extent. Now, maybe some games he appeared in mop up duty and others he was right smack in the middle of it. But the fact that you have a guy in there who was contributing to Oregon's double digit win season last year makes a difference here. And they need help on the defensive line. There's no question about that, Stephen. You know, they got some guys banged up at the spring game last week. I'm not really, you know, Jarrell Boykin's one of them, the nose tackle. And Mahai could be a guy that could play the nose, depending on if Boykin's was to be, you know, if fall camp and him, you know, if he was to miss fall camp or the start of fall camp or whatever the case may be. I don't think it's that bad, but it's a case where either way you need a really solid rotation at the nose. And I don't think Baylor really had that on its roster after Boykins. And now with Mahai coming in, you can put him either way. He can be your backup nose or your starter, however that looks. Mm-hmm. You can put him on the inside. You can put him at a strictly defensive tackle spot. So I think in that case, that's great help. This front, I mean, look, pretty much after Boykins, again, Ajuko, TJ Franklin, and Gabe Hall, there really wasn't that lot. There really wasn't that much experience and that much of known commodities with the defensive lineman coming back for this year. And as we've talked about so many times, Stephen, this defense or this season, I feel is pretty pivotal for Baylor's season or in Miranda's tenure there pretty much as to how is it going to look. And if they, you know, with an 8-game home schedule that they have, if this thing doesn't pull off at least 7 wins, with the possibility of catching some breaks and going to 8 or 9, mm-hmm. whatever. But I mean, at a minimum, they've got to win 7 with this thing this year. They really do. But I was going to say, but my last point on this is that you've got to get help in your defensive line. And if your defensive line is iffy and not deep, you're not going to win a lot of football games. And they helped themselves with this addition today.
They helped him. I still don't think they have what you tend to think of as a traditional nose tackle, you know, like a Braby and Roy type.
Yeah.
You know, because Mahai, he's 6'5", 272, so he's a little tall for a nose tackle and he's a little light for a nose tackle.
Right.
And so, you know, that's something that's going to come up. I know that I'm really getting the feeling, and, you know, we talked about it before we started the podcast, that while we tend to think of the teams are set after spring ball, like right now they're still trying to get a lot of people in.
Well, sure, and you've still got the portal period that is open all the way through this coming Sunday where guys can enter it and make their intentions known that they are looking for a new place to play, or in some cases, being encouraged to go somewhere else to be successful. But I think in this case, like I said, I tweeted this out after the spring game on Saturday saying that Baylor, this program needs help with the defensive line, linebacker, and secondary. So they've been addressing the addition, or the defensive line rather, with my eye. And of course, the Byron Vaughn's commitment, the Utah State transfer, who has 1 year. We should point out too, by the way, that Mahai has, what I think, 2 years left for him. And then Vaughn's, who is going to be a 1 year guy. He has 1 year since he transferred. He already graduated from Utah State, but he's a Fort Worth native. He played at Texas for a while, transferred to Utah State, was actually the defensive MVP of the Mountain West Conference Championship game back in 2021. So there's just some experience with him. I think I would look at him as kind of a rotation guy. Maybe he starts again. I think that's all going to be settled once Baylor gets going with fall camp. But I think the one thing that we learn about spring ball is that while you install your base offense and your defense and so forth, you can really assess how you still need to upgrade somewhere. And if guys, and it's kind of, and football has become so much plug and play in some respects that it's okay to grab guys off the portal because they're going to be quick learners. And the other fact is, as I've mentioned before, that football has become a 365 day sport insofar that guys are repping every day and they've seen just about every kind of defense there is to play. If you're on the defensive side, you know how to play in a three-man front. You know how to play in a four-man front. And it's just all about the terminology and just getting used to that.
I think that's going to be, I kind of wonder if they're going to have to start homogenizing some of this because there is so much transfer from team to team now.
Well, I mean,
rather than having just a signature, this is what our defense does. Like Rule was,
yeah.
He played a very vanilla defense, but he was real big on execution.
Well, I would say I see your point, but you know this as well as anybody else, Stephen, because for as many years as you've been around the game, football coaches are always going to want to have that advantage, and they're never going to want to tip their secrets, even though this is such a copycat sport. But their terminology or things of that nature, they're always going to want to maintain that on the identity unknown to itself so that nobody else picks up on it. Because if you're, you know, if you're an opposing offense and you hear the defensive line making the calls like, you know, whatever, and you've heard that before, you might adjust and say, oh, they're going to go into this, or we know what that means, even though, you know, there's, we talk about pre-snap reads, but you know what I mean here. This is a case where I think that no program will ever in its right mind would ever want to go vanilla and never change or play it in a way so that it's easy to, you know, it's easy to detect or easy to dissect and pick apart. They're always going to have to try and maintain some sort of advantage if they want to win. Even though you have your base four-man front defenses, your three-man fronts, or your 4-2-5s, or your stacks, which are your 3-3-5s, which is essentially what Baylor can play often. But the terminology is going to be important there.
Yeah, that, and as far as the terminology, the one that I still remember was, do you remember back when the Tampa Bay Buccaneers just destroyed the Oakland Raiders in the Super Bowl? Back when they were in Oakland?
Oh, yeah.
John Gruden had coached the Raiders the year before, and he went to Tampa Bay. The Raiders did not change their defensive terminology.
Right.
And, you know, and it didn't matter because, the Bucs were in the NFC, Raiders were in the AFC, but when they met in the Super Bowl, the Bucs knew what they were, the Bucs knew all their defensive calls.
Right, and to that point, that's why you have to kind of keep things churning all the way through. And you pretty much have to be one step ahead of it because of the fact now that the portal has become such a thing where guys are running through and people are talking more widespread about anything. So you've always got to be – coaches are paranoid enough as it is, so they'll never want to let anything, you know, catch them off guard.
Yeah, and particularly now that, you know, it used to be, boy, if a guy transferred from one team to another team inside a conference, that was a big deal. And
right. Well, Texas just had that with a receiver going to OU.
Yeah, I mean, today is Thursday. You know, that's just all that happened. All right, now, Baylor's also, I don't think they have either one of them in the house yet, but a Johnny Carter and Antonio Carter, no relation, I don't think.
Right.
They're trying to get both of them, which tells us this defense could end up looking very different. That the post-spring roster are too deep isn't going to make a whole lot of difference.
Well, yeah, and that's why, you know, well, I don't think Dave Aranda's ever released a post-too deep or a spring-too deep after the spring game as long as I've been around Dave. But anyway, they're looking at secondary help again. As I mentioned earlier, they really need portal help in all three tiers of the defense. And so they're addressing the defensive line. They've got to get more help in the secondary. Two unsure the corners back there. There's just not a lot of great depth back there. Now, Johnny Carter, who's from Utah State, was also in on an official visit last week. And he's from Galena Park, North Shore. He would have 1 year of eligibility remaining. He just graduated from Utah State as well. So he's looking for a, you know, grad transfer, if you will, that sort of thing. And he's a guy that pretty good playmaker, established track record there, could really help them there in the secondary. I mean, Utah State's program has been pretty solid over the years. Now, he's going to go from G5, just like Vonzi's, he's for his teammate. He's going to go from G5 to P5. But, you know, when you have that, but when you have experience and guys that can take it up a notch, that always can help. I would suspect, like I've said before, Stephen, like any of these transfers that came in here, that the Baylor has brought in between the 8 that came, you know, right before, the spring term that started in January and went through spring ball, along with these two defensive linemen that they're coming into, possibly with Carter and the other Carter, they're not getting them to add bodies to the roster. These guys are expected to, at the very least, contribute quite a bit, if not start. And if they're not, then these were really bad evaluations by the coaches, which, you know, by and large, you won't know until they get there. But again, with the Baylor secondary situation, as many issues as that defensive secondary went through last year, the only guy you know that has any kind of experience, that has a decent track record in my mind, is Dunson. But again, he's like one of those guys that I mentioned earlier, you know, played 4 games, got a tackle, you know, that sort of thing. And that's basically what Dunson's career was at Miami. Now, Kevin Williams, who did start in the Armed Forces Bowl against Air Force and looked okay, you know, for what that was. You know, he's a candidate back there, but it's pretty clear, as, you know, Matthew Pallage was looking at this defense and said, we need help everywhere because we're so super thin. And he's right. And so if Baylor's going to have a credible defense, it's got to make these additions on all three tiers.
Yeah. Now, one of the things, if we start looking at spring ball, I guess we have to start with Aranda said that they decided on their quarterback, that they want to bring it in, and I think it was longtime BU said, I'd be just as happy if they didn't decide until fall camp on the starter. But this appears to be something, and as much as I banged on them about being indecisive, this appears to be something that Aranda's really committed to, is having that quarterback named going into fall camp.
Well, yeah, and that's fine. Now, I think part of what the concern from the Baylor fandom is, they're going by history and what happened last year, and that was, you know, when it got out that Chapin was the starter over Bohannon, what did Bohannon do? Well, he left, and so Baylor was down to 2 scholarship quarterbacks at that time between Chapin and Kyron Drones. Okay. And then they lost.
And then Kyron left.
Yeah. And then, well, Kyron left in December or November, whenever that was. But they went into the fall season with 2 scholarship quarterbacks. Well, they only have 2 scholarship quarterbacks right now. And so I think there's that fear of, if we need, this is from the fan base, if they name a quarterback, who's to say that one of them won't bolt? Well, I mean, I get that, but I don't think that it's going to be a situation where, you know, my personal feeling is that I don't think either Chapin or Robertson would bolt. Chapin, because he's invested too much time there, and even if he doesn't get named the starter, however that's going to look and whenever that's going to get released or whatever that's going to look like, is Chapin's, you know, it's not a case where you just say, I didn't get the job, so I'm going to take my toys and go home. That's not the way to approach it. You got to fight for something here. And I think that's kind of the mentality that some people feel like, but that's also the way the quarterback situation works. Now, for Robertson, I would be shocked. Let's just say, for the sake of discussion, I would be shocked if he was to, you know, get picked, you know, not get picked as the starter and then go to the portal. It happens. There was a TCU running back high school kid that entered in January, apparently didn't like what he saw, and he's already gotten into the portal already. But having said that, I think if you're Robertson, it doesn't do your career any good if you keep bouncing around from program to program, because then your development keeps regressing. You don't get a chance to get into a system and really learn the nuances so that you can get better as a quarterback overall. And I think, so that's why I think from the standpoint of Robertson, I think the way this is going to be presented is something that I've tweeted out, something I've talked about on the site, that my theory has been that Chapin's going to get named the starter, but there's a very short leash on him. And, you know, he may get through Texas State fine in the opener Labor Day weekend, but if he really flounders against Utah in week two and gets pulled, then you got a problem. And then that's where you probably make the change to Robertson. What you don't want to have happen, though, is if you're going back and forth with quarterbacks during the course of the season, then that really shows, I wouldn't say instability, but it just shows a lot of inconsistency, and you're trying to find someone who can make a difference, and you can't. And that's when your offense really starts to bog down. But again, I think Chapin will be named the starter with the understanding, and I think this is probably what Robertson would be told, if this is the way it comes down, is we're going to name Blake because he's the incumbent and he knows the offense a little bit better than you do because he's been here for 2 years and you just got here. But keep working, because if he struggles, you're in.
Now, with Chapin and with Robertson, when I watched them in the spring game, and you said you think that they got everything done that they wanted to in the scrimmage the week before, the only difference that I really saw between them was that it looked to me like Chapin was making a little bit riskier throws than Robertson, but other than that, arm strength looked similar, mobility looked similar.
Yeah,
I didn't see a whole lot of difference. Now,
well, and I know there were a couple balls that Chapin threw that could have been picked off if it was a normal game, you know, that could have been interceptions, and that's where the Chapin, I mean, for all we know, Stephen, the concern that I have for Blake is, where is he at mentally?
Mm-hmm.
Again, this is under the presumption that he's named the starter, but the question is where is he at mentally right now? Because he really had a rough last nine games, starting with Oklahoma State. I think I have the stat, 12 turnovers in the last nine games of the year,
mm-hmm.
excluding the bowl. I mean, I think that was including the bowl game where he didn't turn it over, you know, that sort of thing. But I mean, I think that's really what it is. And it was pointed out on the board about his foot move, you know, the way he sets his feet in the pocket, not so good, you know, that sort of thing. And my feeling here about him is that he's got to figure out where he is as a quarterback. And if, for instance, if fans are pointing out that they thought that his foot movement in the way he moved his feet in the pocket were subject, that's not good, because that's something that he should have been working on to really get better at in the off season. And if it didn't translate over to the green and gold game, when will it?
These guys have been playing each other, and they know each other's tendencies and everything like that. But I didn't think the secondary looked that bad. I thought the secondary looked pretty decent. And I think that that's one of the reasons. Now, they did just miss on a couple of long balls, but
right.
But
there were a couple. But there were a lot of checkdowns in that game.
Yeah,
too,
I mean, it was like 85-90% of the games of the passes ended up being checkdowns.
Right.
And where
right.
you saw them actually getting those quote explosive plays at 20 yards or more. Well, generally when they
right.
hit a broken field after like a 3 or 4 yard pass.
Right. And I mean, those are fun if you break them, but if you can't, but you cannot rely on that because everyone's going to sit back and take off on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you become too predictable, which again, everyone should take what happened with the spring game with the biggest grain of salt in the history of salt. You know, and now it's different because I watched a little bit of the Alabama A game where that, you know, where they kind of treated that like a real game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think from that standpoint that they have to, you know, where that's a little bit of a different animal. But again, everybody treats the spring game differently of how do we want this to look. And I personally feel like that's kind of what Baylor, I think, you know, with their hokey scoring system and that sort of thing, it was just kind of a, you know, let's just get it done and have it pleasing on the eyes for a lot of people, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think that probably 95% of their plays were designed within 10 yards from the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
I did not see much attempt to stretch the field.
Yeah.
So, you know, all of those things make a difference. I didn't think any of the running backs just blew the doors off anybody, but there were some pretty good runs from a bunch of different people.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a good thing. Monterey Baldwin can still run in an open field, I'll tell you that.
Well, okay, and the one thing about this offense for this year is can it be explosive? And I'm still concerned about that.
I do not think it can. Not where it is now.
I mean, it's got to. I mean, you have explosive type players in Baldwin. I don't think you have an explosive, and I don't know what Ketron Jackson's capable of because we really didn't get anything out of his performance in the Green and Gold game. I mean, and again, saying what I said about the Green and Gold game and what he did or didn't do, there has to be that certain thing where he says, you know, where you at least see something like, man, he's got a chance to be really good, and you didn't really see that from him. So that's kind of the issue there with him. So maybe we'll see it in Texas State. But at the same time, that's where the Baylor receiver situation is concerning to me is I've got a Baldwin who can get into the open field, but I don't know if he can break, you know, several tackles and be that alpha type of player, which a 5'10" guy really shouldn't be. You know, your alpha guy has to be 6'2" or something like that. That's where it really comes down to.
All right. Well, I tell you what, let's continue this one next week because you want to close it out for us?
Yes, sir. So we'll continue on following what the Baylor coaches are doing. They're out on the road. We'll obviously track their portal situation there with these defensive backs of the Carters, unrelated Carters, but we'll keep you posted on that. And again, since we're done with football, of course, baseball is continuing its season. We'll cover that. But we'll just keep you posted on any recruiting news and things of that nature. And we'll talk to you all next week on the Sikkim Sports Chat.